What's up, everybody? Welcome to Show Me the Meaning, Wisecracks Movie Podcast.
Show me the meaning!
My name is Jared, and joined here by the Show Me the Meaning crew, we got Jacob.
Hello, hello!
And Greg.
What's up, what's up?
And joining us again is Alec. What's up, Alec?
Yeah, hi.
All right, so today we're talking about the 1999 film Office Space, written and directed by Mike Judge, starring Ron Livingston and Jennifer Aniston. As always, we're going to go around and talk about the first time we saw this movie as well as revisiting it for this podcast. But on top of that, I want to know, what would you do with $1 million?
Let's start. Two dicks at the same time.
Two
dicks.
All right.
That's it?
let's start with Greg. Greg, what was it like first time you saw it?
You know, guys, I got to tell you, man, I can't remember the first time I've seen this movie. It feels like this movie has been around ever since I graduated from high school. I remember seeing it in like early 2001. That's when I recall like seeing it a lot. And I remember a job I had that this movie was referenced all the time. And what was that work? The first time I saw this movie, I was working at like a telemarketing gig. So we were in cubicles.
It
was MCI WorldCom.
Wow. Is your name Cassius Green?
Yes, it is. You should hear my other voice. that was the first time I remember that the movie, and it had all these references to it. But watching it again, man, it's wild how deep that movie is. You know, that's what I was feeling while I was watching it over the weekend, and how weird it is to like. I can see myself in that situation right now, and. And just the when he just stops giving a fuck, when he just stops caring, it's crazy how he starts getting everything that he kind of wants at that point. But it's still a fantasy, and it's a great movie. And with $1 million, oh man, that's not even a lot of money anymore, though. You know what I mean? Sad. I'd buy a crib. Couple of cribs and you know just
Joshua
make.
Tree man Joshua
oh
Tree.
I mean that,
of course
that, that's nothing though.
A container
I'll do
swimming
Joshua
pool.
Tree I'll do Joshua Tree I'll do back home and then I just travel a lot and I'll probably do drugs again. That's it.
Yeah, more, like what you were saying, watching it since high school, this is definitely the first time I've watched it since I've had a job.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Wow.
Like so it definitely has a whole different meaning.
Totally.
When you're not watching it as a kid. Yeah.
Corporate accounts payable, Mina speaking. Just a moment.
All right, Jacob, what about you?
Vito Reese, I had a childhood friend that saw it in theaters. He went to go see some other movie. I don't know what was happening in 99 or 98, whatever movie he was playing, but that was sold out, so he had to go see Office Space, this movie called Office Space. And he said, dude, it was amazing. And we must have been in middle school or high school probably at that time. And he said, it's incredible. So he got it on tape, or I think it's tape at the time, had me come over to his house and watch it. It was kind of like one of those movies that went straight to tape.
Yeah.
Because it didn't do well in theaters, I don't
Not
think
at all.
And I sat down, and I loved it. I just remember it being so funny. Like, these characters. It was like the first time kind of like the Coen brothers has these kind of cartoon-like characters. It felt a lot to me like a comic I used to read, Dilbert. It had like a lot of this corporate environment being the joke and these people and these characters. So I saw it first time at Vito's house, I guess in 2000 or something. And then I ended up living that life. I worked in corporate software for 7 years of my life and my career. And, you know, we were trying to be the anti-Office Space, but there's so much of that that just seeps into any job. So, like, the movie just became like this Bible for me for years and years and years. I've seen it probably really like 40 to 50 times. I mean, honestly, a lot. And I did not watch it again for this podcast. I don't know if I really needed to, but... it's just very important piece of my life.
I also grabbed you like 30 minutes ago. Yeah. I was like, hey, did you join the podcast?
Yeah, and I was like, okay, sure, I love it. And I got the Inatech cup, and we got Mr. Lumberg back there.
That's
but,
right.
No, it was, you know, it's just a great movie. What would I do with $1 million? Yeah. Two dudes at the same time. I love that. It's like, I would do nothing. You don't need $1 million to nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do shit.
Yeah, that's my other like wise words to live by.
Yes. I also love, I got to get my ass up at Las Colinas. Got to get my ass up at 6 a.m. every day this week. I'm putting up the drywall over at the new McDonald's.
All right, Alec, what about you?
I don't remember exactly the first time I saw this movie, but it came out around the time I was 9. And it's a movie, one of the few movies I owned on DVD, and I watched it all the time. And at some point, I made the conscious decision, for better or worse, to like become Peter at that time. So I like stopped doing all my homework. I was like, you know what? I could just pass school with just doing well on tests. Like, I don't need homework. And like, just like interpersonal problems, just did not give a shit. I'm not still like that. I went to college and was like, oh, I actually enjoy applying myself. But yeah, it had this very weird effect on me as a child. And it's also weird, the other people might know this, is the other movie that had a weird influence on me was Fight Club, and they came out in the same year.
Is this movie 97?
99. Yeah, I mean, this is a crazy
Fight Club,
year.
Right, Magnolia.
The Matrix, Office Space,
man.
American Beauty.
I gotta say,
a crazy
I
year.
Mean, were times better then? I mean, the music was certainly better. Well, maybe.
Yeah.
I
got hit by the nostalgia bug for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, what was like revisiting it, Alec?
It was awesome. It was just as good, if not better. I think I understood context. The last time I saw this was probably before I started working in different kinds of offices and stuff like that. So it gives me a whole new context, which is amazing. And as far as $1 million, it's not a lot of money. I feel like I could buy a nice 2-bedroom in a nice neighborhood in Brooklyn somewhere.
$1 million is still a lot of money.
I mean, look,
we're talking about working a shitty software job. Like, yeah, it's still a lot of money.
Would the answer change drastically if I upped it to $2 million?
I mean, it hasn't. Inflation hasn't gotten.
What's the number amount of money
we've become
that would
so
make
jaded.
It a different
we
answer.
Talked about this, Jared.
$5 million?
It's $10 million.
$10 million.
$10 million.
$10 million, great.
$10 million, and never have to work a day in your life again.
Because you could live off the interest. Where $1 million, you can live off the interest, but like you could live a middle class lifestyle off the interest. You would never be able to touch it. $10 million, you could be making like $600,000, $700,000 a year. You know, if you play your money right. What more do you need than that?
$1 million, you can fuck that up in a week.
Yeah.
you can fuck up $1 million.
I would be like precious with it. Like, never. I wouldn't change a single iota except for, you know, who
two
you sleep with.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
yeah, but
you can make it
that,
laugh.
What does that actually
no,
mean?
No, but the freedom that you really want, I think, is, like you're saying, $10 million. Which I guess, I can't imagine it's gone 10x. I mean, inflation hasn't gone that bad in 20 years. But anyway, $10 million, you never have to work a day again in your life. You get to fly first class anywhere. That's nice.
I want to know, because like, I was listening to your, Greg, I was listening to Blackstage, Greg's podcast he does with us, and you guys mentioned something about how when you see Silicon Valley billionaires, like these nerdy guys in like Ferraris and stuff, how it's weird.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think about that a lot, how no matter how much money you make, no matter whatever, you're still you and you're still,
totally.
You're still there.
Yeah.
And now I want to hear, like, when you say, I have $1 million, I'll do two dudes at once or have sex, what is...
Yeah, but
walk
I'm being incredibly facetious.
Yeah, but not really.
I don't think my
like
confidence
walk me would... through the steps of like, all right, I have $1 million. What are the steps to get to
I think you need
really attractive men in your bed or
I think
whatever
you need or whatever it is. Craigslist. I think you need to have Craigslist. I think it,
passport.
I think in like the logical steps here of two chicks at the same time, and let's just take Peter's example. It probably means, or Lawrence's example, it probably means like he's going to get out of that shitty apartment. He's going to get a nice pad,
okay,
and the pad will become the panty dropper, and that will be the reason why he has the confidence to be able to get two chicks at the same time. Or he'll just feel confident.
See, this is like the same
thing.
I go back to what Greg was talking about in his podcast, but like, look at Aziz, man. He has all the money in the world.
Ooh, bad with women.
And still horrible with women.
Horrible with women.
He can still take a girl back to his pad, which I'm sure is super impressive, and still fuck it.
You're right. No, I mean, it's not like all of a sudden the money...
So bad, I'm sorry.
Right. It's not like the money just like solves your ability to
be
suave.
Yeah.
That's
the point I'm bringing up.
I just imagine that more people are willing to sleep with a weirdo when he's got a ton of money,
sure,
a ton of power.
It can only help,
I
really
guess, yeah. I mean, I remember I had a friend. So this movie also, so it's filmed in Austin. I think Mike Judge is also Texan, you know, from King of the Hill and stuff. And this is very much based on Dell, I'm pretty sure. It's like Dell and the whole world of the startup technology culture. And like Michael Dell is an example. A guy I happened to meet. He spoke at UT. I got to meet the guy. Very socially awkward guy. And he's driving around in a Testarossa, you know, sports car, crazy billionaire dude. And he's taking each speed bump at like 1 mile per hour. And all the employees are just like... It's still the same guy who like couldn't ask a girl on a date at JCC, you know, like it's the same people. Nothing has changed. They just have more money. They can buy more toys. But
totally.
That's it. But that doesn't go away. I mean,
Jacob, if you had, let's turn it to $10 million or $5 million. Would you still pick up a quarter you found on the ground? Because I would.
Absolutely. I absolutely would. I still pick up pennies off urinals. I mean, I'm like no. a cheap man.
I respect that.
Yeah, not in it, but if it's on it, yeah. I mean, I picked up a dime. I know, Alec, you're freaking out.
How often do you go to Coinstar?
I have a lot of coins. I have like big bags.
I have coins,
of it.
But they just, you know, I don't know.
No, Coinstar is, I mean, Coinstar is not bad. I mean, it's 10%.
I love
Me too,
seeing
it's fun.
That. See, I just love watching people do it.
You're gonna see everyone like in their Lamborghinis pulling up and then dumping out quarters and hoping
the
that they get $8
around.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
Can't it is like that a fun $14.
Yeah, but you know you're gonna win.
It's porn. It's like I get to sit back.
Yeah,
like,
you're gonna win,
popcorn.
But you're literally giving away money.
I know, but that might be a good YouTube channel. It's just very cathartic. It's kind of like ASMR.
The Coinstar
money.
It's not a channel.
It's Jew ASMR.
It's like somebody like squeezing. A pimple or something. It's right. It's nice to watch.
All right. So first time I saw this movie, I saw it in the theater with my mom, but I was like 11 years old or something like that. So I didn't. This is back in the time when I thought of comedy, I thought of Jim Carrey movies. Okay. So I didn't even. I didn't get it at all. I was like, wait a second. You're telling me that I'm supposed to laugh at something that isn't a guy talking out of his ass? Like, how am I supposed to know when to laugh?
Here we're actually hearing Jared's childhood be ruined as he starts to realize the reality of the world.
And then
that misery.
So me and my mom did not get it, didn't like it. So I didn't see it for like 10 years later. I think I've only seen this movie 3 times. I saw it again in college. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm getting this now. Mm. This is hilarious. And then last night I watched it, and it's hilarious.
It's incredibly profound.
It's incredibly profound.
And prophetic, too.
And prophetic and super cathartic to watch for people who are frustrated with their job or just to even see Peter brush off all the stuff, off his boss, pursue his dreams fearlessly is just so cathartic.
It kind of has an ending similar to like Good Will Hunting in the sense that it's like, fuck it all. I'm going to go into construction. Physical. I feel satisfied and happy and fulfilled in my life now.
I'm outside.
But I like that obviously it's got the beat the system theme. You know, it's got that whole idea of fuck the system.
Yeah.
Fuck this oppression.
Yeah.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster. Fuck up the copy maker, the copy machine.
Yeah.
My stapler.
Yeah. Milton is just, he's great.
Timeless.
Excuse me. I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume from 9 to 11, so yes, I haven't set the building on fire. That's the last straw.
All the happy voices, though. I love how, like...
Are you having a bad case of the Mondays?
Oh, it's like everybody's so happy and like...
Now, Milton, don't be greedy. Pass it along so everyone gets a piece.
Do you have people like that at your job?
Oh, I just know people like that in life, and like people that are just
people like Brandon, who got all the he's got
the flair.
50 pieces of flair.
People that take their shitty jobs too seriously.
Too seriously,
like,
man.
Dog, come on, man. They don't care about you. I don't know how many times I've been in the back. I'm like, they don't give a fuck about you, dog.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when we did the Sorry to Bother You podcast? I never said my shittiest job, and my shittiest job was I used to work at Jimmy John's, the sandwich company, my boss took his job way too seriously. I got reprimanded once because when people would leave the sandwich shop, I would say, "Hey, thanks for coming," and he's like, "Don't say that. That's disgusting."
What? Oh, because
you can't say
what did
coming?
He want you to say?
He want
coming just for saying coming?
Because I said thanks for coming.
Man.
Thanks for coming on my thigh.
And I was like, it took me like I was like you. I was like, what?
What?
And then he said like thanks for being a good customer.
Thanks for being a great fan.
Like,
yeah,
something like that.
Wow.
Check that guy's van.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right. Come on.
So
imagine working in a sandwich shop under a guy who takes his life that seriously. It was bad. But with $1 million, I guess a house. Yeah, just somewhere to live for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, now that would I don't know if I'd get it in L.A. I don't know where I would get
no,
it.
No, see, LA is going
to... It's like such a waste of money,
it's a
right?
waste. You throw everything away.
You're going to run out of water in like 2 years.
Well, it's just like you're done with your $1 million with like one transaction.
Yeah. You're done with your million, and it's basically a
and
condo.
Then you gotta pay your, and then you got to pay your
it's
taxes.
It's a condo, whereas you could go into... You can get a mansion somewhere.
Oh, in Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, man, Texas.
Texas is getting expensive now, too. You got to go, I don't know, Montana or Idaho or something.
Middle America.
You can buy your own
Just get
town.
Your land. Just get your
yeah,
own
or
land.
Joshua Tree.
Oh, yeah.
Joshua Tree, I was just there, and they were complaining that all the people from L.A. were buying up all the property.
I know. That's because Greg
that's
and I want to get a place there.
I mean, hey.
$25,000 for 5 acres.
Tell those lazy motherfuckers to save their brand so they can buy those acres out there. It's been for sale forever.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's go into a recap. So... The soul-crushing mundanity of his daily grind at software company Initech has computer engineer Peter convinced to see an occupational hypnotherapist. The hypnotherapist puts him in a state of complete relaxation and dies before he can snap him out of it. Peter now does not give a single fuck, even skipping weekend work because he didn't feel like it. Peter fearlessly asks out his dream girl, Joanna, dismisses his boss's requests, and charms the consultants in charge of downsizing the company with his don't care attitude. The consultants promote Peter, but fire his friends Michael and Samir, so the three of them team up to rip off the company with a virus that steals fractions of a cent with every bank transaction. Joanna quits her shitty job, and the boys panic when Michael's virus works too well. They have over $300,000 in one business day, so they consider laundering the money, but Peter ultimately decides to return the money and confess by leaving it in an envelope under his boss's door. Milton, an employee that has been abused left and right, burns the building down and takes the money. So Peter, Michael, and Samir are off scot-free. Peter takes a more rewarding construction job, while Milton enjoys his new fortune at a resort, but still gets no respect. End of movie.
It's so good.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I, as you're saying the recap, I have so many quotes or so many good ones. Like, I must have put a decimal in the wrong place. I'm always doing that. It's like some mundane detail. This isn't a mundane detail, Michael.
It's so good. Yeah. You know, one of the things that you mentioned, I mean, first of all, I just want to talk about some of the ways that the movie criticizes corporate culture. I mean, one of the things that I was struck with is just how the set, the design is so good. I know this movie was made on a low budget, but it still works so well. Like, the white sterility of Peter's cube is just so soul-crushing.
And sad,
so sad. There's no decoration. There's no decoration in his apartment. Just everything about his life is just drab. Yeah.
I imagine, honestly, you can connect it a lot to the Amazon fulfillment, like the episode we saw in South Park. But, like, that whole soul-crushing, like, you work and you go home, and, like, the whole of it is just sort of
nothing.
A sad, there's nothingness. Yeah. Your whole life is pretty empty, and you're just really working for this soulless job that you're so disconnected from.
Filling time.
Every day
there's no agency.
Yeah.
This is life.
Well, I was just going to say, I was going to go through some of the ways that it criticizes corporate culture. Like, one detail that I didn't remember is that Lumberg drives a Porsche.
Yeah.
Everyone else has like a generic Honda or something like that.
Milton takes the bus.
I love some. Milton takes the bus. I love this talk about motivation.
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorite parts about the movie on this rewatch, but go ahead.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and read it. He says, "Now I work my ass off, and Inatech ships a few extra units. I don't see another dime, so where's the motivation? And here's something else, Bob. I have 8 different bosses right now, so that means when I make a mistake, I have 8 different people coming to tell me about it. That's my only real motivation, is not to be hassled. That and the fear of losing my job."
I love it. He's like, eight.
Eight, yeah. So what were you going to say, Alec?
Well, it's interesting. I think this movie is or will be a cultural artifact of office culture. I don't think office culture is as much like this. I'm sure there still are offices like this, but we've talked about this in one of our videos, but there's these authors, Baltonsky and Cipollo, who talk about, it's like in the 60s, 70s, 80s, there's this real crisis of motivating your workers. And if anything, it's exactly what Peter is saying, that, you know, I don't get shit. So managers had to freak out and figure out how to motivate them. And I feel like now what we see more often in companies is the sort of tchotchke style of motivation. It's not, I'm telling you, you need to do your job and do this TPS report right. It's like, oh, I know the minimum is 15, but like, isn't this your true passion to wait tables to some shitty customers?
Yeah, or like the tchotchkes maybe are different in that, you know, there's tons of perks and there's great snacks and there's bean bags and all of these things. Look how fun it is here. You're not going to find a better place to just hang out. You love work.
Yeah, I wonder how much of the development of Silicon Valley corporate culture, which is what we're talking about, of how, oh, you have a whole buffet here, or we have beanbag chairs, and you're not here to work. You're here to have fun and also work. I wonder how much that is actually basically a reaction to this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone in San Francisco, everyone in these companies, they've all seen this movie. They all know that it's soul-crushing. They all get the message of this movie, and I feel
and
like
I've
this
come to
movie,
a place where beanbags and snack bars and all that stuff, I mean, not to say I'm totally super jaded, but I look at it for what it is.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to keep you at work all day long.
Trying to keep you happy, and
it's, I just look at it as sort of as repressive and sad, or oppressive and sad, you know, as
it's worth,
what this version
worth
of it was
that
in the 90s.
Crack has free snacks in the office.
No, well, not anymore.
Nah, we've
yeah,
cut that on
we've cut snack. That back. Yeah, we're going retro. I will tell you, you said, I don't know if these offices exist. I had to go to our accountant's office last week, and we used to shoot Thug Notes there. Remember that accountant's office back on the west side?
Course.
And like that place is Office Space. I mean, like, not that it's oppressive, but it's like you know, what
the color, everyone's got a lights, suit, tie,
color, suit and tie. I mean, they're very nice people, really.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just like, hi, and you can hear like the air conditioner, like the rattle.
But
it is like
some people actually love that.
No, I get it. Librarians and stuff
thrive for it.
But you can hear yourself dying.
Oh yeah, totally. You can see it in the pictures. But just look at the pictures around your office.
But there's also a sort of,
and all cubicles and
it's interesting. You see the movement because, you know, Mike Judge also works on Silicon Valley, so there's this kind of culture, like the accountant's office, and then Silicon Valley is all about like, oh, you're not repressed, like you're not Peter or Samir, you're free. You know, we have an open office and we have snacks and we have a ping pong table, and Silicon Valley is all about mocking that sort of model of
a new generation of it.
Yeah, but
I think that's great.
But it's weird. There's like a pushback where I, especially open offices in particular, people are like, just give me a fucking cubicle. I can't fucking focus because there's 8 million people trying to talk to me and I just want to be by myself.
Right. I think people, it's like a ping ponging going back and forth of like, it wants to be like a social environment. It's going to feel like a big city. We're going to have these really great collisions while we walk into each other in the middle of the floor. And now it's like, no, please leave me alone. I need to focus and concentrate.
Let me be by myself.
And I want it to be silent. And and you feel it like even at the YouTube space or something. Like it's very fun and it's engineered to be fun. It's mandatory engineered.
Mandatory fun.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like it's oppressive in its own weird way. But that's why some work can be kind of, as long as you find contentment in it, you know, the way Peter does ultimately at the end, or the same thing Good Will Hunting, like you just sort of find a love of the thing that you're doing, you can kind of be liberated a bit. But yeah, the environment, and man, corporate environments are just oppressive. They just suck.
Well, they know what they're doing.
Yeah,
they have meetings to figure out the way to make as much money off of them as possible.
Right.
I think they could make a movie like Office Space, but call it like App Job. Right now, you know what I mean?
Like in the tech world? Like,
exactly. With all the guys that are doing the app jobs for the tech companies, you know, like the Lyft drivers, the Postmates drivers.
Liza Koshy has a show like that
called
Liza On Demand, where she's just sort of like every day she's doing TaskRabbit, or she's doing Postmates, or she's doing, it's a good show, actually.
It's on YouTube?
It's on YouTube Red. Not that I'm promoting them at all. Okay. Screw them. But yeah. it's a pretty good show. She did a really good job. But it's all about that, like living this world of like freelance,
app job, your
sort of day-to-day, and then all
and
the
you
shitty
you're
people
free,
you're dealing with.
But you're not free at
all. No.
You're really like the slave of the slaves.
And you're a slave of the rating systems, which is the software company I used to work for was in ratings.
Yeah.
But you're a slave to, like, please give me five stars.
Oh, yeah.
Does he complain about this a lot? Yeah.
It's funny, Brad does, like, really shitty shit when he's driving, but his rating is always good. He tells me the stuff he does, I'm like, wow.
What he gets away with?
Because I know about how shitty the rating system is, I was literally in Uber where he just blew through an intersection and almost got in an accident. And it was like, I was like, well, I don't want to make him lose his job, so I guess I just won't leave a review. Or I had a driver that was falling asleep at the wheel at 4 a.m.
Oh,
and
my
I was
God.
Like,
oh,
four
shit.
Stars?
Yeah. If you don't have a good review to give, don't leave a review at all.
Yeah.
Well, I give everybody.
But part of me is like, I don't want this person to lose their job. I mean, everyone has their off days. Like, who am I to judge? But I'm like, but I don't want someone to die in your car. So I really don't know what to do.
they're so scared. They pull up, and he's like, hey, I'm sorry, I was late. I was like, dog, it's all right, man. It's okay.
Please.
I'm going to give you five stars.
And it's like Black Mirror.
Yeah.
So Alec brought up Baltansky and Chappello, and I was like, oh, he's either going to bring up this or this other thing. And so luckily I came prepared for the other thing, and I think that you can probably guess what it is. Why don't you guess before I just go for it?
The other thing, is it Bartleby? No.
It's close. Well, kind of, yeah. It basically is. It's Zizek and the Postmodern Boss.
Yeah.
Okay, so Zizek...
we have no idea what you're talking about. Greg and I are like...
well, this is like Alec and I, since we spend most of our days just brainstorming about videos, we kind of are a little bit too close to each other's brains.
I talk to Jared more than I talk to my
Barnum
girlfriend.
And Bailey?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how about that The Stars Born?
So Zizek talks about this thing called the postmodern boss. So whereas a regular boss will just tell you what to do. Like, hey, fuckface, clock in at 9, you're doing this, if you like it or not. The postmodern boss, he tries to be your friend. He's like overly polite and chummy and tells you what to do, but veils it and appeals to friendship or a larger company mission.
That's me, unfortunately. So sorry. I'm going to get offended here.
So here's the thing.
Jacob's different. Hold on.
Well, where it gets...
I am Lumberg.
Where it gets troublesome is... So, for example, if you say, instead of be here Saturday, it's... You don't have to come in Saturday, but your participation would really show that you've bought into the company culture and the company's mission. And this is, at least according to him, more oppressive because it not only asks you to do the work, but to love the work. And that's so much more dangerous because it's asking you to essentially brainwash yourself for the purpose of the company. And so Lumberg isn't quite the postmodern boss, but he does represent a bit of this transition in that direct in which if you could just do that, or hey Peter, what's up? You know, like the, that kind of.
But that's exactly who the
Tchotchkes guy is 100%. Let me just read the quote. So the Tchotchkes guy, this is the postmodern boss to a T. He says, look, we want you to express yourself, okay? Now, if you feel that the bare minimum is enough, then okay. But some people choose to wear more, and we encourage that, okay? You do want to express yourself, don't you? Yeah, okay, great. That's all I ask.
And that's Mike Judge, by the way, is the boss.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. I mean, that guy's work has... You know, been through my life so much, but I don't really know what he looks like. Oh yeah, I was a huge Beavis and Butthead.
He's amazing. His oeuvre is incredible.
Yeah,
I really love this theory. Zizek doesn't use these terms, but in my mind, it's the Jewish grandmother theory of power, which is exactly what my grandmother is like. As an old Jewish woman, it's not like, you know, Alec, come visit me on Saturday. It's like, oh, your grandmother's so lonely. Don't you want to visit her? Wouldn't that make me feel so good?
I'm like, or just like. Wait, but I got to go to Six Flags. Six Flags.
Oh, sounds like fun, yeah.
Okay, just leave me here to weep alone in the dark.
That guilt. guilt is the worst.
Yeah, that's way worse.
Star is terrible.
Yeah, for sure. One of my favorite parts of the movie is the workplace accident that was the character's name. I don't remember what
Tom?
His name gets in.
Yeah, Tom.
It's not a workplace accident. He gets hit by a car.
Oh, I'm sorry. I always wonder, how does he get that huge settlement then?
Someone T-bones him.
Okay. That's right. So he's at the party, and he's all fucked up in a wheelchair. And he says, just remember, if you hang in there long enough, good things can happen in this world. I mean, look at me. And this, along with the pet rock thing, I feel like that his whole character is just the super cynical ways that you can escape the system. Because this movie was made, remember in the 90s, in 1994, when that woman at McDonald's spilled that hot
sauce on herself?
She got paid. She got paid.
She got paid. And so I feel like in the 90s, there was all... This made me remember that it was...
Liberation through litigation or something?
Exactly. Like people would always just jokingly say, like, oh, man, you know, I'll just get hit by a truck, sue, and then I'll be good the rest of my life. You know, it's like, maybe, hey, please
slip.
Do... Yeah, yeah, please do bump me in front of traffic.
I always say, like, please don't get on the ladder here. We have really shitty insurance. That's, like, my go-to line.
Yeah. And then he does a similar kind of cynical thing with the pet rock. I love this. Let me find it. He says, you know, there are people in this world that don't have to put up with all this shit. Like that guy that invented the pet rock. You see, that's what you have to do. You have to use your mind and come up with a really great idea like that. And you can make millions, never have to work again. And then I think it's Michael Bolton is like, you think the pet rock was really a great idea? And he goes, sure it was. The guy made $1 million.
The guy made $1 million.
I know so many exactly. people like that. They're just like, my success in life needs to be by making money via the most bullshit way. And I respect it.
Yeah, my thinking has evolved a lot, but I think it's just like a luxury where you just sort of, I don't know, I think the tide will turn. Like maybe one day I'll be like, it's all about the money. Who gives a shit what it is? And I think I did really come from that pedigree.
Yeah.
And or I think I admired it. I don't think I actually had it in me to do, to make shitty shit and try to make tons of money. But I know people who can, and I admired it for a long time. And now I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. Oh. I'm sure it'll swing right back.
Were you like, Jared, can you make more shitty shit so we can make more shitty money?
Yeah, that's what Jared and I just can't do it. That's why we're bad at YouTube.
Yeah. We need books to make our videos.
Right.
The streets are paved with it in this city, man.
Yes.
So many people make
You read a whole book about, like, basically fucking people over with bad ideas. Wasn't that like...
I couldn't. There's a book about basically the way that the online blogosphere came to be and how it was all just paved with cynical growth techniques that basically...
Like catapulted
it threw truth to the wind. It was just using media to manipulate the truth just to literally get more and more clicks. And I had to stop reading it because the parallels between it and YouTube were so clear, and it was just making me very sad.
Oh, yeah.
So I had
I
to
feel
stop.
Like the modern I version like... of the Pet Rock is the guy who has like a fake news site where he just like swaps the headlines.
I don't know why. I want to hear why he's laughing. Yeah.
Greg is just realizing.
Oh man, no, I just love that. I just love to see your face too. It was like, oh, it's too close to what we're doing. Right.
This is Jared's life every day, man. It's hard shit out there.
Nah, I hear
you. Were you going to say, Alec?
I was just going to say, I think the modern incarnation of this is the guy who owns a fake news site, two fake news sites. One's liberal, one's like Republican. And it's just the same stories, but flipped for like, depending on what the outrage needs to be. And that person is just making so much fucking money.
I knew one of those.
You knew one of those?
Yeah. I did.
Oh, wait. I think I know this person,
his name.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I knew someone, again, just unscrupulous, right? Like, okay, if people want, they would actually write the same exact story in both ways. I don't know if we're getting off topic, but they'd write the same story for a conservative slant, for a liberal slant, put them both up. They'd both do great. And then it's, again, there's no actual backbone.
Are we dumb for having these morals?
That's a good question. No, that's a good question. Like, you know. I look at they start to skim off the top. They start to win in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, oh my God, what do? We should be criminals. Let's launder the money. We don't even know how to do that.
Only because they fucked up.
They fucked up, yes.
If they hadn't fucked up.
I guess they would be sitting fat and happy over time.
Right.
But I don't know. I think eventually it catches up to them. I think part of this is there is like a morality to like,
yeah.
I think Peter is liberated because he did do the right thing. He felt good about at least, you know what, I can clear my conscience. I put the money under the table or under the door. When it went down, I don't think he's sitting there saying, oh God, I could have kept that. What was I thinking? He's like, he's free.
Yeah.
So I think there's something about the moral stance, like it's sitting on you and your conscience is cleared. When you feel like you've done the right thing, you've liberated yourself, and now you can go do whatever the hell you want to do.
Even with the analogy to like...
he's not tied to the money, ultimately.
The stuff... I'm talking about us now.
Like, okay. That,
yeah, No. I hear
you. No, it's a good question.
Here's the thing for me.
I think
it's like...
No,
I'm sorry. See the way I did it?
No.
I'm talking about us. Fuck.
I get it. No, what's that? I mean...
For me, it's that... even if you race to the bottom in whatever industry you're doing, there's no guarantee... that you're going to win.
True.
And for me, to race to the bottom and to give up all your morals and still lose is the worst fate.
Yeah, it's the worst outcome.
That's very true.
And so like that's what that's what I couldn't
I feel
live
very
with.
Similarly.
I respect that.
Yeah.
I respect that.
But I had to do a lot of soul searching myself to see, like, what kind of scumbag am I? And I realized that I'm a really bad one. So I'm like these guys, like, to conceal the source of money as by channeling it through an intermediary. What the fuck does that mean? No, like, I'm not a good criminal man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not what I don't know. I just couldn't. How about you, man?
Well, not criminal. I mean, I'm looking at like, you know, like soulless art. You see like people doing like the shittiest. In my business, we call it just hack.
Like Thomas Kincaid kind of guy. You remember that guy who used to paint landscapes, made kabillions of dollars. And it
who's a big hack, successful stand-up that you would...
Dan Cook?
Jeff Dunham.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I go back and forth with Dane, because Dane was like the first smart dude that did it the internet way, but Jeff Dunham is the hugest.
I don't know who that is.
What
does
he mean? Yeah.
He's the puppet dude. He's the dude that did the puppet, the racist-ass puppets.
Okay, yeah.
And every little kid and mom across this country knows who he is, but he's a huge hack. And
hacking that he's just not a talented guy.
What about Carlos
guy,
Mencia? Just... Remember that whole thing?
At least he stole.
better?
I mean, that's better, but at least you stole material from funny people. This guy is just up here.
Just not
doing,
funny?
I'm an Arab, you know what I mean? And I'm a, you know, just like, yeah.
It's just cheap. Like, it
it's
just
very, yeah, it's the bottom of the barrel. Yeah, you're shooting crabs in a.
But again, like, imagine you do that work and then you don't make it.
Yeah,
then you're really,
right.
like, you're stuck with. You probably
horrible.
Hate yourself.
No, you're right.
And there's also a difference between what you're describing is creating media that is literally just make, you know, we have a problem in this country where there's too much of a culture divide.
Yeah.
And to be making
feeding
money, feeding into it.
Yeah.
That's different than the pet rock. The pet rock is just a dumb idea that some people
like
happen to find
weight.
Gratification.
Like the shake weight. It's funny enough.
It's
that
not
it
hurting
money.
Anybody. Right.
Right.
It's maybe dumb. But then again, the pet rock and the shake weight, that's like you won the lottery.
Yeah.
That made a lot of money, right?
I think it did. I think it's all on a joke. You know what I mean? But it worked. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Or a lot of these, like, as seen on TV things, like the bacon bowl or whatever, like, yeah. I have no issue with that. Like, fuck it. If that's your passion or you're an inventor and you got into CVS and you're selling that stuff, like, I don't care if you made millions of dollars. Or the woman who made Spanx, a billionaire.
Is she a billionaire?
Self-made billionaire.
What is Spanx?
Spanx is like a compression stocking for your body. Like you can like
men and women use it too.
Oh yeah,
it's
Spanx
sides.
For men.
Yeah,
so
totally
it's like this woman just decided
like spandex.
It's like spandex, but it's like a girdle. Like it holds your body in. But anyway, so she was like she used to like cut her own stockings and put it around her waist. Invented this product, and obviously enough people wanted it. She made billions of dollars. I'm not saying like okay, maybe it feeds into body image issues.
Yeah,
there's a lot of problems you can bring up about it. I don't care.
Still making
yeah.
money.
I don't think she's.
There's
I mean,
a lot. There's
the product
a line.
Might be good. I mean, yeah. who cares? Someone feels more confident. She made $1 billion. I mean, I'd love to have some of that.
Yeah, let me get some of that Spanx money, girl.
But great. Yeah. I mean,
there's like some products. Remember the Yo app?
Yes.
The Yo app.
Wait, no. I'm thinking of Yo Sushi. No, what's Yo app?
The Yo app was just an app that you. They made fun of it on Silicon Valley. They turned it into the Bro app.
Oh, you push a button?
All you do, it's one button to say Yo to your friends. And it got like jillions of users. And this 17-year-old kid who created it sold it for like $10
billion. Flappy Bird or something?
Yeah. And to me, that's like, that kid's just lucky. But it's the people who. Yeah, try to
it's
spread fake news
and
or
exploiting people's emotions and shit.
And sometimes that line gets a little bit blurry because I think that, especially with social media, people are vulnerable. You know, people go on Instagram or Facebook and they're not in the best mental state. They're feeling
sad or lonely.
And I think there are a lot of businesses that are able to optimize the ad stuff to take advantage of that.
Totally.
And so,
it's that manipulation that's like, that's the tough one. We're going to bake a bacon bowl, like, all right. I mean, maybe it's unhealthy. I mean, again, you can find a problem with anything, but I think it's the exploitation. It's like, are you really feeding into someone's whatever their weaknesses in order to make money?
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, feeding into their psychology or whatever, like with fake news. I don't know, but
good discussion.
Again,
I like that.
That's interesting. Good but anyway, discussion. Is it?
I'm curious, Greg, have you ever had that crossroads where it's like, man, should I just do this hack shit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see stuff all the time that other comics are doing, and I'm like, oh, really? Oh, God. And then they blow up off of it.
Shit.
Yeah, I've seen a guy move to L.A., and the first time I saw him, I was like, oh, wow.
Have you ever dipped your toe into that kind of hacky territory?
I can't do that, because I got to look at myself in the face, and then I got to look at other people that know me. But yeah, this is a guy who moved here. I saw his set, and I went home, and I was like, "Babe, this dude, woo, cooning it up."
And then he blew up.
He blew up.
Oh man,
I know you're not gonna say anything, but is he big enough that I would know him? Okay.
Yeah, if you've seen
I'll
right
stop
days,
there.
Yeah, yeah,
I'll
yeah.
Stop there,
but it's that kind of you probably see that after making that kind of moral judgment, and then you're like. What am I doing wrong? Is my morality the problem here?
Because
finished last kind of mentality, and that's like it eats at you.
It does eat it. I mean, because you see the guy making money, but then you talk to other people and they see the same thing, and they're like, oh, yeah, man.
That helps.
Those eyes got real big.
Like, yeah, man. Do you think he cares, though, or he's just too busy getting paid, doesn't care about it?
Yeah, I don't think he cares.
Maybe part of it's down there, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
It's funny, though. It's a good conversation piece. Yeah.
Yeah. So next thing I want to talk about is something we've talked about before. We even talked about it a bit on our Fyre Festival podcast, is this thing that we see a lot is a juxtaposition between rap and white-collar hustling. Mm. So, this movie's got
door.
Scarface and the Ghetto Boys.
Was this
which
the
is,
first one? Oh, go ahead. Keep going, though. I mean,
I just wanted to shout out to Houston Rap and, Mike Judge doing the Houston thing.
Was this the first one, though? Because, I mean, like, Silicon Valley, Silicon Valley eats it up. They you know what I mean? But was this the first one I actually did
that? I think it might
be. Went hard on it?
Because, yeah, I think people always reference, damn, it feels
good
to
be
a gangster
in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
You know, I don't feel as, like, I look at Silicon Valley sometimes and I'm like, man, y'all really don't have a lot of brothers on this show. y'all are hardcore with the hood gangster music, but with Office Space, I didn't feel it as much with Office Space. I felt like they were just doing it not as I don't get the same feeling as I get with
that awkwardness.
It plays into
them,
it, right?
Yeah, it kind of plays into it. The fact that
he's not tough. Oh, especially Michael Bolton
at the
beginning scene. He's like trying to be tough. He can sing along. He's great.
Yeah.
He's out of high school now. He's out of college. He's cool. And then he's like really scared and locks his door to like a, what is it, guy said it's like balloons or something?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. The black guy who's panhandling.
Not even panhandling. I think he's like selling something.
Oh, he's selling
something.
Isn't
he like, it's like a very like friendly, harmless guy and he's like, lock the door.
Yeah.
Michael Bolton's really scared little boy. I mean, he's like a completely terrified kid basically, but he thinks he's all tough.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Is it that he thinks he's tough, or is that he gets something out of expressing that kind of anger that's in rap music?
Or, I think we get that with the copy machine.
You know, because rap music's all about escaping a shitty situation, sometimes through illegal activities.
It's about like
that as like Michael Bolton's just trying to be cool. Like he happens to know the lyrics. He happens to be able to sing along.
But he's like by himself at his own commute. Like you think he's trying to show off to
other
people?
No, but it's like it feels good and empowering, and it's kind of like, I don't know.
But when he saw his boy Peter, you know, after they did the whole thing with the girl, was like, Michael Bolton, is that your real name? He's like, yeah, that's my real name. And then Peter comes by, and he was like, yo. You know, like he does that whole thing. So.
Oh yeah, and when someone walks by, Michael Bolton's like, "Sup, G?"
He leads into it.
Yeah,
he's trying to be cool.
Yeah,
but it's funny. I didn't. It's funny in this movie. It's not as much
really
funny
well
as
done.
Silicon Valley.
I think it's still funny in Silicon Valley.
The music is about like I am so deprived of agency or autonomy or whatever you want to call it, and this is a music that's about taking control of your life. And like exerting your machismo or whatever. So it's like, yeah, I'm a fucking gangster, even though I'm like a little dipshit like programmer.
Yeah, and Michael Bolton even says, the reason I work at Inditech is because I'm a pussy.
Yeah, exactly.
and there's nothing less pussyish than rap music.
Yeah.
So I totally get it. Yeah.
Also, the diversity thing is kind of funny. You've got Samir, and like it's still like at a time when it's like, there's no respect, really. It's like Samir
not gonna work
here anymore. And then also the judge later on, he's like Samir na in a jar. It's not that hard. It's Nain in a jar. Nain in a jar. But like, there's that the little bit of diversity that's kind of funny that they're playing with too. I mean, the whole because you end up in a working environment where you've got to be professional and polite and courteous, but there's still like things like that. Like people are just not used to this. Like, how do you pronounce that name?
Yeah, definitely. What do you guys think about the conclusion about that he manual labor as a kind of cure all for soul crushing office work? Does it feel gratifying? Is it a good resolution for you guys?
I think so. Like I said, to me, it felt like Good Will Hunting. Like again, especially because he gives up that money, he's let go of this whole dream of I need to fuck people over to be happy. He finds the contentment in himself, and ultimately, it's something very simple. I don't think it matters that it is construction, but it's something very simple where he just knows he goes to work, does his job, he feels good about it. There's no one really bossing him around. At least nobody don't see that. He's just doing his thing. And of course, the fact that he's cleaning up the ashes of this shitty company is even better. Like he's picking up those crumbling ashes. That's really satisfying to him. But I think that's to me, it's cathartic in that it's very simple. Like he's found contentment in something very easy. It's not some fantasy or some scam.
It's very similar to some other stuff we've talked about. We've talked about this idea of like pastoral serenity in Farmville, mm-hmm. but just the mm-hmm. idea of like modern life is hectic and crazy and stressful and your job sucks and whatever. So people often now have this idea that I'm just going to fucking give it all up and live on a farm, work on a farm, you know, go to the woods, pull a Ted Kaczynski. It manifests itself in a lot of different
integrity.
Ways.
Integrity. Yeah. Simple pleasure.
Yeah, integrity. And I think construction is just a version of that. And I think, I mean, this was even, you find it like there's a sort of, not a nature movement, but like Teddy Roosevelt, this whole idea that to have like the modern world is crazy enough that we need to like constantly go back to simpler nature, et cetera, to make sure we're kind of well-balanced. I think it's just like another iteration of that. And, I think it was satisfying for me. And even I was in Death Valley the other week and I was like, you know, if Wisecrack goes out of business, maybe I'll just become a park ranger. Like, who gives a shit? Like, I'll talk to tourists about fucking scorpions and shit. And I'll, you know,
you can clean toilets.
You might just go a month without a paycheck, but
yeah. But yeah, whatever.
But you got nice rocks.
Yeah. What about Milton? Like at the end, he still gets no respect. Is there any real salvation for him? He still can't even get the guy to get his drink order right.
Yeah, he's chilling now, though.
He is chilling.
He doesn't have to go in, you know.
I don't remember. What was the end with Milton?
He's on the beach. He's at a resort.
Oh, right.
But then he's like, I actually asked for no salt on the rim of this glass.
So he's still meek and he's still miserable.
And the guy like doesn't give a shit. Yeah. Like, he's just
he's like stupid
lumber.
Gringo. I think is what he says. He's like stupid gringo.
Just to butt in for a second, I want to give a big shout out to Rage Brew for the donation. He says, "Love your stuff, dude.
Oh,
Thug Notes is awesome, but all the Wisecrack is awesome. So thank you, Rage Brew.
Rock
thank
and
you,
roll.
Rage Brew.
Thank you.
Thank you, man." Yeah, I think he's getting a Corona with the salt on the rim. Yeah, I don't remember. I think he just seems like he's eternally doomed.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I love that actor, by the way.
Milton.
Who is that guy?
He's Ron Livingston. No, what's his name?
He's the guy who wants the eyes and get
out.
He's
in a lot of stuff now,
right? Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I want
those
eyes, man. And it's because his eyes are so fucked up in this movie. It's a shared universe.
He's also in a... What else is he in? He's in some other movies,
too. See,
now
that
too.
Movie would get a million.
He's in Idiocracy.
Yeah.
He plays the judge.
Video, yeah.
He plays one of the judges.
We've got... I mean, man, the whole movie is excellent. For the boss thing, I think getting back to the boss thing, just like the oppressive boss that kind of masquerades as like you're going to be committed to the company culture. I worked in software for 7 years. And I worked in, during this wave of like the next evolution, which was kind of an early stage of what you're getting in Silicon Valley in this show, and it is so much part of and I don't know how it's changing, but it's so much part of leadership in that world where everyone's bought into the greater vision and there is this sense that everyone's got to be on the same page, and it's kind of like that campy behavior where you're like, we're all in this together and we're all going to go up and down together and that kind of thing. Whereas I felt I lived in Europe for a while. You didn't get that a lot. There's a lot of cynicism about companies. I mean, a lot of it baked in. You'd love this, Alan.
Oh, I would.
Like everyone, the expectation across the board as an employee in Europe is like, the company is trying to fuck you. They're going to try to give you lots of reasons to like it, but you should be incredibly cynical. And I don't know what's happening now. Like, I don't know what it's like at, say, Google or Facebook or Amazon or Apple or wherever. Like, well, in terms of not like the fulfillment jobs, but like in the corporate environment. I don't know how leadership
is different. Europe will pass laws. I forget what exact countries this is in, but like it's now illegal for employers to email you past five. So it's like the culture tries to creep in and be like, yeah, your life is your work. And they're like, no, you can't send them any emails past 5 o'clock, which... Right. Is great, but I assume there's like a pressure from America, like even places like Spain where we have a siesta. I'm interested if anyone lives in Spain to see if that sort of thing exists, because they're dealing internationally with people who don't do that sort of thing.
Yeah, it makes it less competitive. Like as an entrepreneur, it's less to get a workforce that's very restricted and very regulated, and you know you just get less productivity typically, but. It's a weird balance, like, because you're like balancing this, like, what are the motivations, and
our whole millennial generation, their primary concern is having a job that is fulfilling, and so these companies are just kind of packaging that up for them and trying to sell them on that vision,
right?
And it's now the scary thing is it becomes very cult-like, where I've never worked at a Google or anything like that, but from what I would imagine, it's very much like everyone's drinking the Kool-Aid and you don't question the Kool-Aid.
But I wonder if even that's like already passe in the sense that it's already that was the
it's already gone.
Yeah, that was like a different generation of, I mean, and these generations are moving very quickly. I think they're like within 5 to 10 year little like spurts. But I think I wonder if that's more of like in the realm, in the world of like Facebook, like again, which is already about 15 years ago or 20 years ago now. 15 years ago, like that whole like, okay, we're connecting people together, and this is the buy-in, and we're all, you know, people are gonna be more connected than ever between families and friends, and then you see the repercussions of that, and maybe that just happens in every company, but I wonder if like that's like of a different generation. I don't know what's happening right now, like the big startups like Magic Leap or Tesla or whatever. Like, how are those cultures different? I have no clue.
I mean, Elon I don't work Musk there anymore. Is a guy who was sleeping on the factory line and was angry at employees for, you know, not answering emails
not working
at
hard
hours
enough
of the day and stuff like that. But
so, yeah,
I mean, I've been in smaller, not exactly startup situations where I'm going to be very vague here, but I remember having a conversation with the boss. They made something very shitty and wanted us to get it out there to all the journalists, all the whatever. And yeah, you know, we were doing exactly what we were told, but he could kind of intuit that we weren't doing it like it was our last dying wish to see this thing succeed. I was like, how can I motivate you? How can I motivate you? And everyone just was kind of quiet because we're like, we're just doing it because you give us a paycheck. Like, we all think it's kind of shitty.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just say more money?
Because I probably would. Because
Alec doesn't work that way.
I'll do that for money. Sorry, go ahead.
I was a bartender, and I had this German manager who was real cool. Cool dude. I
remember
liked him
this
a lot.
Guy. Yeah, the water guy.
He's a water guy. Real cool. And we had like this, every once a month, we'd have these concerts at the LACMA, at our restaurant, at our bar. And he was doing something. He was like, Greg, come on. Why you not? Hey, come on. You can help me do this, you know? Like, and I was like, you know, Martin, if my W-2 said the same that your W-2 said, I'd be a little bit more motivated to do this like you are. And he was like, you're right. You're right. You got it.
See, good for you, man.
Like, man, you got a Porsche. You know, like, shut the fuck up. You know, like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Good I'm out you. Here at 8. Yeah. It was, I kept it. I mean, I was leaving in a couple of months. And I didn't care. I was like,
yeah, Peter's like, can I give you a promotion, man? Like you're.
I didn't give a fuck. And I think people respect that, too. I think
absolutely.
People respect
the honesty.
Just
not honest. Rolling over.
Like, nah, man. You got it. I'm out of here.
Absolutely. That confidence.
Anything else you guys want to bring up about the movie before we go into the mailbag?
So looking at my notes.
Good movie.
Software.
I know something I want to bring up.
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Did anyone... Well, I don't think anyone had this thought. As I was watching this movie, I couldn't help but think that this movie is Django Unchained for white people. I'm just going to leave it there and you react to that.
Go on.
Yeah, I want to hear more.
Right? I'm not comparing working in an office
slavery
to
revenge fantasy.
Yeah. I love that. I was like, no.
I get it.
But it's a revenge fantasy about like the oppressive structure around you. Obviously, in Django, it's slavery and burning down the plantation. In this case, it's your shitty boss and then ripping down the "Is this good for the company?" banner and then eventually burning down the office. They both end in things burning, is all I'm saying.
I got a friend, I'm not going to name his name, but Jacob, actually both Jacob and Alec know this guy, and he is from a very, very wealthy family, just never asked to work a second in his life, and sometimes when I look at just the amount of freedom that he has, I do think like the difference between the amount of freedom that he has and the amount of freedom as I have. Now, I would never liken it to something between like a slave and a free man, but it is a large gap.
Yeah, totally.
And sometimes it makes it a little bit difficult to connect with him because it's almost like we're two different beings. Oh, he's like an alien to me almost. He can't understand what my life's like. I can't understand what his life is like. And
you connect on human emotions, though. Those are almost identical.
Yeah.
You know?
No, we're so close. Like it's not like we don't hang out.
But like feelings of becoming and finding yourself and what you want to do with your life. Like those things... Those things are pretty universal.
But there are certain times where conversations get awkward between the two of us where it never gets awkward with other people. Yeah. So, for example, he once asked me, "Are you ever want to make movies?
You ever want to buy two planes at the same time?"
He said, "Do you have the desire to make movies anymore?" And I said, I mean, only if some guy with a lot of money just gave it to me and let me do whatever I wanted. And I immediately was like, oh.
Does he read it?
Does he think that I'm talking about him? I hope he doesn't think I'm hitting him up for money, because I'm not.
Yeah.
This guy once told me that, and this is apparently something that rich people go through, which I did not know about, but he once told me that he was in college and he was wrestling with a friend, just like playing, you know, like drunk, whatever, in college. And he accidentally broke the guy's arm. And the guy's parents, when he found out, they, just knowing that my friend's parents were as wealthy as they are, sued the family just because they knew that they could get the money, that they would just settle in a second and get tens of thousands of dollars for it. Can you imagine the awkwardness between you and your roommate that, yeah, my parents sued your parents, you know, just because they knew they could get the money? Yeah.
That happened?
That happened. That happened. Yeah.
How much money?
$40,000.
Yeah, 40 G's.
$40,000.
Wow. Broken arm?
Max went to a friend. I have my cousin Max went to a friend's house. They have very rich family from like the Palisades or something. They got on some golf carts. They had golf carts on their property at their house. They're fucking around their kids. They roll over. He broke his arm or his leg or something. His foot. He broke his ankle. And the parents immediately thinking, oh God, the first thing that's going to happen is this kid, Max, is going to sue us. They like disowned him as a friend. Like they had to completely separate. They didn't allow, and it was Max, like my cousin, never sued them. He knew it was his own fucking fault that he did that. But just that dynamics at play is just so sad.
Yeah,
but
that money shit.
Money is
more money.
I think of Richie Rich. That was a great movie, by the way. I don't see that again. But like, yeah, it's like you just create these separations. You're like, man, I can't even interact with the real world anymore. It's like the Michael Jackson thing. Like, you just can't even interact because you're so rich.
We have like trust fund comedians. Mm. You know, like everybody, most comics are just like, you know.
Oh, it's like all entertainment.
Yeah, but you have these kids that are just like, I just graduated from college and my parents just give me rent. They just pay for everything and I'm just out there doing comedy and they don't have to work. And once you find out that a kid is like a trust fund comic, oh.
You write him off?
Oh, everybody just disowns him. Everybody's like, fuck this kid. You know,
that's kind of like a version of, I wouldn't say racism, but it's like a, what do you call it? Discrimination,
prejudice.
Right? Like prejudice.
Totally. But, okay, say if it's a trust fund comic and he's funny, it's like, all right, at least you're working.
Thinking of like, what's her name?
But if you're not funny, you can still outlast other people, and that's what sucks.
You can still outlast. And it just shows that you don't.
I've been out here for 10, 12 years, and you notice that the people that are still here are the ones that can
Got that money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they got that money. Yeah.
But what, like Dreyfus, like, what's her name? Julia Louis Dreyfus. Yeah. Like, you can admire her. She's already a billionaire.
And she's still working.
But she's so good. Like, she's so good.
Yeah, talent.
Like, you really admire that talent because she doesn't have to work, but she's just fucking good.
I think Nick Kroll is like that. Yeah. I don't really have strong opinions of him, but, like, he is from a very rich family, but, you know, still.
Kroll, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a wild boy. I like Nick.
And to be honest, I do think that if you are from a moneyed family and you're given some sort of an opportunity that other people don't and you fail, you probably feel like a huge piece of shit.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, if you're like whatever Ivan Reitman's kid is, Jason Reitman.
Oh, yeah.
And your movie sucks. You kind of look like a real like piece of shit, you know? Anyway. All right, guys, we're going to go into the mailbag. So you can call us at 213-534-8807 or 21-ELF-GUT. Or Elf Hut 07. So.
What?
Oh, Jacob, you have a voicemail.
You don't have to play my voicemail. Yeah. Oh, no. All it was I listened to the Roma podcast. I loved Roma. Sad it didn't win Best Picture, but I have not seen Green Book, so I can't say if it's better or not. Yeah. But in Roma, you mentioned that in the podcast, you say that that Roma was made by Netflix and financed by Netflix, and therefore it's made and intended to be watched on a television set. Not quite the truth.
Right.
The movie was financed, I think, by Participant Media and a few other folks, and it was made to be a theatrical release film. Netflix just bought the distribution rights after the movie was made. So the movie was always intended to be pretty cinematic. So really, my only point was, the movie was kind of made to be watched in the theater. It wasn't like it's meant to be watched on a small screen.
I didn't know that.
Now, Netflix did distribute it, and I guess it is meant to be watched at home, too. But It's part of why I think Netflix put it into theaters, and they kind of they wanted it to maybe win Best Picture. But anyway, that's all I had to say.
I regret not seeing it in a theater, and I did not know that.
And it's still playing at the Vista, so you can still see it in theaters. And
still playing at the Vista?
Yeah.
Goodness.
It's so good.
Oh, it's a great movie. I love it.
But that's all I had to say about that. So you can skip my voicemail.
Okay, we're going to skip Jacob's. We got one from Sean for last week's Tetsuo the Iron Man podcast.
Hey, what's up, Wisecrack? This is Sean. I was just listening to the Tetsuo Iron Man podcast. And you guys brought up Velvet Buzzsaw, and I also saw that film quite recently. And I was actually hammering it the whole film. Just the, its attempt at trying to be meta without actually being meta, I find it quite bizarre. But one interesting thing, and I hope you guys can understand this better than I can, it has this really weird motif with fire where every time the artist's dead soul reaches out to cause general shenanigans, the paintings will crack and start to burn, and even that's reflected in some, in most of the paintings, actually, that he does. There's, you know, big fire motif, and the painting at the end with the blazing sun at the center of it that we kind of pan into till we fade out. It's just this really weird motif that I feel like I didn't understand, or it wasn't addressed, or maybe it's just total crap. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Greg, did you see this movie?
Iron Man?
No, Velvet Buzzsaw on Netflix.
Haven't seen it.
Yeah, Sean, I hate to say I haven't seen the movie, but I'm going to try and watch it as soon as I can get back to you. Sorry about that. Next one's from Craig.
Hey, Wisecrack. Calling about the Show Me the Meaning. I know you guys have the ongoing segment with the Rick and Morty podcast about the Rick and Morty porn names. I figured you could start a new segment for Show Me the Meaning where callers chime in with their best Ryan Show Me the Meaning. I'll get you started. Show me the meaning!
This guy's like a Ryan Martin.
Oh, yeah. That sounds just like him.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
All right. If you guys, anyone wants to send us a voicemail with a badass Show Me the Meaning, we will play it.
Yes.
So thank you, Craig, for starting something. So once again, 213-534-8807. Let us hear those pipes, man. Give us a big show me the meaning.
Yeah.
Greg does a good one, too.
Yes, you do.
If you could be Greg or Ryan,
I want to hear like a Jim Carrey version. Show me the meaning.
Show me the meaning. All right. We got a couple more for Roma. I'm just going to pick one randomly. Let's go with Victor.
Hey there, Wisecast crew. Victor from Mexico here. I would like to start by saying how much I love Wisecrack. It helps me to see beyond the movie and, in a way, follow the white rabbit into the hole and dive into what the story is really saying. I was a patron for a while, can no longer afford it, but I want I want you to know that I love what you do and support you in any way I can. I'm a big fan of you all, and find really insightful and entertaining what you say about movies, series, and games. I love the videos you make and this podcast. I just called to comment about the movie Roma, and I am sorry for this, Jared, because you should have watched it in the movie theater.
I should have.
Because Rome was not produced by Netflix, according to what I've read. The movie was produced by Esperanto Filmo, which is Cuarón's company, and Participant Media.
Oh, there it is. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Netflix only has the distribution rights. My second comment is also another thing that Jared said. Sorry. Sorry again.
Wrong.
But this family is definitely not middle class. They have two women working for them day and night, and also their house is quite large and located in a district where the upper and middle class live. Another indication is that they own three cars, and I'm sure that Galaxy car looks expensive, and their New Year's celebration looks very fancy. Once again, thank you, Jared, Justin, Brian, and all the Wisecrack crew for doing what you love and sharing it with us. And please send my regards to Garrick's Wormalite and his eyebrows. My family enjoys his alien's view of the Earthling cinema. Looking forward for the next podcast. Peace.
That was great. Thanks, thank you so really much. Awesome. That's a lot of love.
Awesome.
Thank you.
One of the reasons why I decided to say middle class is because one of the other Mexican films that I love so much is Y Tu Mamá También. And I guess those people are mega rich.
Well, yeah, in that movie, so this was supposed to be completely autobiographical, whereas Y Tu Mamá También was more inspired by his background. That one, his dad, in Y Tu Mamá También, his dad is working for the president of Mexico. So that's like a completely different level of like aristocracy and sort of connections and connected blood. This one is definitely his life, which I'd probably say is upper middle class, because it's not like aristocracy where they have their own, like, you know, they have their entire, like, whatever, compound or block or whatever.
Right.
But it is definitely upper middle class. I mean, these guys are wealthy enough. His dad's a doctor. They've got all the cars, like he said. But I think this is really his childhood. And he is – so there was a question about, like, which kid is he supposed to be? In the articles, in the, like, the interviews, he's the little kid, the kid who's sort of, like, saying –
the kid who cries at the dinner table when
– Yes, and the kid who's sort of like, I, like, when I used to be dead, this and this and this happened, which is so interesting. By the way, I have an old friend of mine. His daughter says that. She, like, she was born, and out of the womb when she first started talking, she was like – before, like, when I was dead, I used to do this, this, and this. Like, she has, like, these visions of a past life, which is so interesting.
Beautiful.
But, like, that kid is, yeah, he's supposed to be Alfonso Cuarón, like, this really sweet kid who's sort of, like, you know, in love with this nanny. And but that's his life. This is, like, his life that he recreated. It's such a sweet movie. Like,
you should tell your friend to write that stuff down about that kid.
Yeah, it's interesting. They say that there's, like, this, in order to be born a Buddha, you have to be born within your birth sac, or like, it's like the womb is not punctured or something. You heard of that?
No.
Like, the placebo has not been punctured or something. So this guy's daughter was born that way, like in the sac.
Oh, and they came out. Oh, and they had to take her out.
They had to take it, like, pull it off of her face. And then anyway, so she had that when she was born, and then she says he has these visions of, like, back when I was dead, or before or before I was your daughter, I did this. Yeah. And she talks about this stuff as if it's normal. It's like,
when I was Joan of Arc.
right. So she's like the Buddha, man. She's like, she's the next Dalai Lama. Dalai Lamas are born that way. Sorry, that's what I meant.
Speaking of Roma, we got a email from Lucy. Lucy says, "Hey guys, it's been a while. Sorry for my radio silence. I've been convalescing from getting run over by a bus." Welcome to the life of a U.S. soldier. I think that I believe Lucy's from. I don't want to get it wrong. She joined the U.S. military trying to get citizenship, and I've only just managed to get through all of Nick Cage month.
Woo!
So she wanted to tell us about a bit of a scandal going on in Mexico. She says there's a petition going on so that the actress who played Cleo should be banned from attending events, as she's not a professional actress and merely scored a good role on Luck Alone. This is a real petition signed by multiple people in the film industry in Mexico and even internationally. It hinges on the idea that only those who can appreciate the hard work and the technique and the beauty of art. There's a Brazilian book by the name of The Hour of the Star by Clarice Lispector, and she goes on to summarize the book. Basically, she says, Clarice Lispector made it as such that her main character had only one beautiful and happy moment in her life, and it's when she heard a particular song. When she listened, she didn't understand it in the academic sense, but she understood the beauty of the song from the depth of the soul. In that one moment, she destroyed all assumptions that art must be studied in order to be appreciated, and even the most ignorant and miserable can see the beauty that it holds. So her conclusion is that Roma, like this story, showed that art does not need to be studied to be expressed, loved, or felt. I thought that it was exquisite and that it's only right that it should cause some form of havoc in the closed, haughty circle of stuck-up filmmakers, actors, and critics.
Yeah, I think fuck it. Like, who cares if you're – it sounds like SAG-type propaganda. Like,
totally.
Acting unions would say you can't be considered a real actress unless you've studied the craft and have said –
it's kind of bullshit.
It's an identity thing. Like, I've come out as a gay man, or I've come out as an actress, and now because I've said those words, now I can be considered and evaluated that way. It seems a bit odd.
Yeah, somebody,
but I can see it. I can see the snuffing. I can see that totally happening.
Just bougie people everywhere, man. That's somebody, all it is. Haters everywhere.
Like, if she did a remarkable job, whether she was a professional actress or not,
sometimes a role doesn't call for... Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think he's a good actor, but it's not because he's diverse. It's not because he can... It's just because he has presence. It's because he doesn't have to have range to be a good actor. He just has to function well in the movie. And... that's what happens.
They just hate, man. Some people are just good off the back, you know.
Yeah.
No training. They just come off the street.
She was natural and just ready.
Natural, great.
I felt nervous for her because I think I was watching the Academy Awards last night, and like the camera's on her for Best Actress. I knew she probably wouldn't win because she's not a professional actress, and I think the Academy works that way. And I think it's a first time role, and a lot of the issues. But like all of Mexico, I heard, was like sort of watching with bated breath for this event. You know, all of Mexico, all of the area of Roma is like waiting, and poor thing is sitting there in this award. I mean, there's Glenn Close next to her, and she's like, the cameras are on her. Poor thing, you know. I just felt like really bad for her.
How old is
she? Were announcing. Oh, she must not be like, I don't know, 30-some maybe?
Okay.
I don't know.
Good for her, though.
Somebody in the Discord, Fox Metro, said, when are you guys going to finally do Twin Peaks? And it's because of this. because Twin Peaks is my favorite show of all time, and I appreciate it on a level that is not academic in a sense. Like, I've seen the whole thing like twice. I loved every second of it. I probably understand less than your average viewer because I just don't care.
You're not trying
it's
to interpret
just a
it.
Visceral
washing yeah. over you,
washing over me. And I don't want to ruin that, so I'm sorry, Fox Metro. But
he did thank Citizen Kane, by the way, yesterday. Alfonso Cuarón did. So you'd mentioned that it's got to be inspired by that. He said there were movies that inspired me so greatly as a child and in my life, my career. And he mentioned Citizen Kane. He didn't
Citizen
mention
Kane,
Fellini,
Deep
but
Focus.
Yeah,
he did or did not mention Fellini.
He did not mention Fellini yesterday, last night, but he did say Citizen Kane. I was just thinking about the podcast, like, yeah, it's inspired.
And what other movies? I mean, he did E2 Mama Tabi and...
Just so good. I'd love to cover that movie on this. I just saw it again.
That's great his movie. Best.
And, I saw that in the theater.
Diego Luna was on the Oscars yesterday. I was like, man, that movie is so
It's so good.
Gil
good.
Garcia, too?
Yeah. So good.
He made... did he make the bear rape movie? Oh, no, that
Revenant,
was Inarritu.
Inarritu, yeah. Inarritu. Inarritu.
Okay.
Get the accent right. Inarritu.
Inarritu.
I haven't seen that.
All right, so this last one is from Brandon. He said, I was listening to your Show Me the Meaning on Tetsuo the Iron Man. I kept thinking that there's something really fascinating about how we are scared and disturbed by things taking on their natural processes. Like you said, static is a TV's natural state, but it's irritating and creepy to us. Metal rusts and make high-pitched noises when it rubs up against other metal. This really bothers us. Looking at bodies decay is disturbing. We're grossed out by mold. Maybe there's something to talk about there. As an aside, I'm allergic to most popularly used metals. My skin breaks out in nasty rash if I wear things like metal necklaces, belt buckles, etc. So I would definitely not make it as Tetsuo. Keep up the good work. From Brandon. It's funny. So I mentioned in the last podcast that I had learned about Tetsuo the Iron Man from an Asian horror film class. And I don't remember if it was in this unit or a different unit, but I believe we were talking about obscenity or something like that. And our teacher was just like, why is it that if I have to take a shit, why can't I just do it in the corner right there? Why don't we all just shit in the corner? It's something that all of us do. There's nothing more natural than taking a shit. Why don't we just do it? And I don't remember if there was particularly an answer, but yeah. I thought it was very interesting.
No, a lot of our modesty and our, these social norms.
You got anything for that, Alec?
Yeah, I'm curious about you, buddy.
Wizards, they just shit and they make it disappear, man.
Are you guys, J.K. Rowling, she's updating her canon. Alec is referencing this thing where J.K. Rowling keeps on updating the canon of Harry Potter, and she just tweets out that apparently
to be
wizards...
more politically correct? Or
no,
more...
hold on, sorry.
She literally does it compulsively. Yeah, go for it.
So J.K. Rowling is constantly updating the canon of Harry Potter. People are like, well, what about this random history? And she does it. So in one of her long-ass screeds about God knows what, she's like... As a brief aside, she mentions that plumbing was introduced to Hogwarts, whatever year it was, 1890, 1900, whatever. And then people are like, huh, if plumbing was introduced that late, like, where'd they go to the bathroom? And instead of just ignoring it, because it's a fucking kid's book and who gives a shit, she's like, well, I need to answer that. Before the introduction of muggle plumbing, wizards would just shit themselves and make it disappear. There you have it. They didn't make magical toilets that made shit disappear without pipes. They just shit themselves. That's the end of my tirade.
Wow.
See, this is what happens
when you have too
much
money.
Yeah.
What else is she going to do? She's got to feel, she's building the canon. She's building a religion, effectively.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. JK.
Yeah.
No, good for her. Also a self-made billionaire.
Just get her off
totally,
Twitter.
Right?
She doesn't need to be on.
I have not paid attention. I'm not on social.
We don't have Twitter. All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for listening. Once again, if you want to send us an email, movies@wisecrack.co. And... we get some user-generated show me the meanings here, some of those yells, so give us a call at 213-53-21-ELF-GUT-07. There we go. Yeah, whatever that is.
Whatever that is, it should be in the description. Leave us a voicemail. Let us hear your show me the meaning.
That's right. See if you can be better than Tom Cruise.
Show me the money!
Woo! All right, where can we find you guys on social media, Greg?
You can find me on Twitter at Greg the Grouch, Instagram, Greg Comedy, and my website, gregcomedy.com.
And check out Greg's podcast, Blackstage.
Blackstage Podcast, Blackstage Podcast on Instagram, Blackstage Pod on Twitter. Check it out.
And Alec.
You can find me on Twitter at WisecrackAlec.
Cool. Jacob and I, we don't do social media because we're afraid of internet derangement syndrome. So you can just catch us on Wisecrack.
Yeah, at Wisecracker, right here in this channel.
Smart.
That's
guy.
Right. All right, guys, signing off for now. Thanks for listening. Thanks.
Yeah. We'll see you next time. Yeah.
That would be,
we'll catch you
that
the next podcast.
Great.
If we can catch you the next podcast, that'd be great. Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right, guys.